The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
Greetings, my friends. I am your semi-silent host, the Monty Man, and this is the Came to Believe Recovery Podcast. And now, here are your podcasting broadcasters, Tom Williams and Alicia Martinez, to introduce this week's topic as we ask the question, what makes Came to Believe different?
Welcome to the Came to Believe Recovery Podcast. I am Alicia. Who are you?
Hi, Alicia.
Hi, Alicia. And I'm Tom. And yeah, welcome everybody to the Came to Believe, our inaugural Came to Believe Recovery Podcast. We're just so excited to be here today to begin bringing content to all of those seeking recovery at whatever level they're in.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm the Monty Man, and most of you know me from Take 12 Recovery Radio, and I'm not going to be interjecting a whole lot here. This is these guys' podcast, but I'm just excited to bring Came to Believe on board as part of our broadcasting team here at Take 12 Recovery Radio. Thanks, guys, for agreeing to join forces here at Take 12 Radio.
Of course. We're going to be talking about what makes Came to Believe different, but before that, Tom and I were discussing, we think it's like good to just start with some small talk so you guys can kind of get to know us and get to know our relationship and what's going on. So what's going on in your life, Tom, that you would want to share?
And, you know, it is, I think it's really important too, that we have these side conversations. And, you know, we were all the three of us on before this talking about stuff that's going on in the world and where we are. And I've been in New York City lately, and dealing with New York City, for all of you that haven't been in New York City, it's definitely a different animal. I was telling Alicia the other day, when I'm out in New Jersey, if I want to go to the store, to the GNC and Best Buy, I don't think much about it. I just get in my car and go to three places. But when you're in Manhattan, you have to think about how you're going to do that, because you have to carry all that stuff back with you.
Wow. And
it's just a different kind of life here as you learn about managing life differently.
Tell them about the fins and what you were doing this week.
Oh, my gosh, this week. So be part of Living in the Go, guys, and we're preempting what we're going to talk about later in the show and how we live today, Alicia and I both, which we really want to make sure that you it comes across clearly that we're doing what we preach. I was getting recertified for diving. How do you dive in New York City in Manhattan?
I have no idea. Not,
what makes Came to Believe different? What makes Tom try to dive in Manhattan, right?
What do you
so
thinking?
There I am.
Why?
So I was telling Alicia, she was laughing. There I am walking down, you know, 18th Street with a set of fins, a snorkel, and a mask in the dead of winter. You know, getting looks like, are you crazy? Heading off to a pool by the Williamsburg Bridge to dive. But I did do it, and I passed that part of the certification. And these are things, Monty and Alicia, that we get to do when we have become recovered from whatever it is that had us in brokenness.
Please, and hey, Tom, my week. Tom, please tell me that you weren't wearing the fins and the
that
goggles.
That would have been awesome.
Because that would be an audition for the graduate, right?
Yeah, right. No, I was not wearing the fins. But I felt foolish carrying this. I mean, I didn't feel foolish, but it was an interesting. I'm very aware of these things these days, guys, that I'm able to do and that I get to do and I'm blessed to do because of walking in recovery.
Amen. Amen. It's almost hard to believe that from whence we came to today, is it not?
It's unbelievably hard to believe. You know, it's 18 years ago when I gave up drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
But I think change is still all the time, guys. I'm still growing. I'm still working a 10, 11, and 12 every day. And all of you listening are going to hear Alicia and I and Monty talk about how it's still every day. It's still every day now. But we do get further and further away from the drink and the drug, I believe. And you get closer and closer and closer to other things in your life that grow and become more profound and take over, and you begin to gather many, many experiences in your life and expertises and habits and hobbies and things that make a really full life that I could not have imagined. It's that fourth dimension of existence the big book talks about.
Yes.
Exactly. And, if you're really...
We're going to have probably a whole episode on that, right, Alicia?
Yeah, let's make notes. Monty, make a note.
Okay, you got it.
What about your week, Alicia? What'd you do?
Well, for me...
Or what happened to you?
Yeah, there's always so much. What do I pick? And I know I already told you, and so me being an oversharer sometimes and being over vulnerable, that's me. You get to know me right away. And I threw it out to Tom, and I still don't know his answer, and I'm kind of afraid. But my main addiction is eating disorders. I've been recovered 5 years from that. And I have the rule of having dessert 4 times a year, and it's been working for me. But lately, I, for some reason, have just been thinking, like, well, wouldn't that be like an alcoholic getting drunk 4 times a year? And is that okay? But food, I know, is a lot different. And there's so many different food programs. Some like measure, and some you have one sniff of something, you're relapsed. And so I'm not in those really, really strict things, but I'm kind of in that space, and it's uncomfortable, but it's been in my head for a while, and I wanted to get it out and be completely honest, because that's something I'm really, really, really trying to work on. And be completely honest. And so I shared it at my Came to Believe meeting last night. And then I've been talking to my husband, but he's not an addict. And Tom never answered me, and I'm afraid of his answer.
You told me not to answer you. You see, you can't win,
Monty.
I wanted
you to ponder. You said, and then
the text said, don't answer me right away.
It's a no, right? Do you think it's a no? That's a bad idea?
Well, you know... So we could address that on two different fronts. One is biologically, scientifically, and medically, right? Because and then the other one would be ethically and morally. I mean, the deal of it is, love, hunger, or food addiction, or inappropriate eating habits, you have to eat. I mean, it's like, can you imagine telling a meth addict, okay, you can only do meth, in the morning or 3 times a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and be able to manage your life? You can't do that with food. You have to eat. So it's what kind of food do we eat, right? Mm-hmm. And do we fall into the area of legalism? If we say, well, I just can't ever have that. And so food does, our bodies do respond to food differently than they do certain chemicals that are abused. But again, are we not talking about an outward manifestation of an inward condition? Again, this is a symptom. It's not the real problem. It has its own health concerns, but what's the real problem? And I think just by the fact that you are asking yourself, I wonder if this is okay, probably means it's not. That's just my take on it.
That's not what I wanted to hear.
I know. Hey, hold on. Let me get my producer to bring me the donuts. Bring them on in.
That's not my fault. And ice cream
and
is
my answer. Yeah, my answer was going to be more of, it's the manifestation of the eating habit ruining your life and making your life unmanageable, because it's different than, you're right, I can't have 3 drinks and you can't, but you have to eat. It's not the fact of eating. Is the eating ruining your life? Have you fallen back into that unmanageability? And if you haven't, I would say don't worry about it. That was going to be my answer.
I agree with
it's
that.
That's a line that's different all. From different people, right? Because I do it 4 times a year
is.
And that's it. I don't then binge again and binge again and binge again after. I just do it. But still,
and I've known you now a couple of years, Alicia, and I don't hear you. If I thought it was something that you were, I would have said something to you a long time ago. I don't think it is. And so that's my, that was going to be my answer. But I absolutely hear what Monty says. If it's bugging you, it's something to talk. You're sharing it with us. You're sharing it. You're doing the right thing. Yeah. You're doing the right thing. This is what you do.
And I'm praying about it. And I'm, it's just, I haven't made up my mind yet, obviously, but I want to do the right thing. And with food, it's just, it's and difficult. So many people are different in their food programs, you know, like, so there's only certain people I can really talk to about it without triggering them. And I'm way maybe farther along in my recovery than some new people. And so anyways, enough of that. Let's get back to our topic.
Well,
but that's what I'm going through.
So Alicia, this is a great, it's still a great segue because you're bringing this up and we're talking about it within the context of people have been through a program. And a program that offered them freedom. Mm. And that's what makes Came to Believe different than many of our other programs. It was a question we were going to ask today. What makes us different? Why is Came to Believe different than anything else?
So
and
when you, Tom, when
of
you
the
say
retreats in the weekend program,
when you say, when you say make it, it brings freedom, that's kind of subjective, right? I mean, what do you mean by that? Is it freedom from bondage of self? Is it freedom from our addictions? What do you mean exactly?
Well, the steps were meant to be a freedom from the bondage of self and your addiction, the obsession over whatever it is that has you in your brokenness. Mm-hmm. Freedom from that thing that controls you and has you whatever state of despair and dysfunction in your life, the steps can lead to a freedom from that and a release from the control that a habit or a substance has over you.
Yeah. So let me ask you. Let me ask you both. Let me ask you both this real quick. So, what is it about possibly other programs that you guys feel don't complete that, don't bring a person over that threshold into freedom?
Well, we're going to keep it in the, let's keep it in the 12-step context, Monty,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
The original, the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, all right? What that program was meant to do, and then if you want what it was meant to do, what do you have to do to get it? So what I think is that why people aren't getting this freedom, this release in other programs, if they're 12-step programs, it's very simple. They're not getting to step 12 and having a spiritual awakening, which is the result, Monty, a result. A lot of people say, all right? So the result is a spiritual awakening. And once you've reached that, you're receiving the promises that are laced throughout the process as you come through it.
Yeah.
And these promises outline a life that doesn't just wash everything away overnight, but it gives you the roadmap to never have to have it wash you over again in your life. So I think what it is, and I don't just think it, I know it from experience of years and years and many interactions through it, is that the reason in these other, especially 12-step programs, are not receiving or speaking this freedom or understanding it, Monty, like we do, is they never reach it.
Which is so sad, right? Because that's what the program is. It's do the steps. Let's get through the steps. Let's and do it quickly and effectively, but do them quickly, not in a year or not in 18 months or not. Some of them don't do them ever, right? In the rooms, which is so sad. And it could be so many different things. They're afraid. They don't have a sponsor. They're new. They're, you know, there's different things, but we need to get them through the steps. Mm-hmm. And they need to do the steps and stay in the steps forever.
Which doesn't necessarily mean you're doing steps 1 through 12 every year, right?
Right. That's a great point.
And you would not be doing 1 through 12 every year.
Amen.
You're going to be doing 10, 11, and 12. And we're just so excited. I mean, I'm almost getting goosebumps now with this opportunity, Monty, this opportunity to be on this type of a platform to be able to speak this truth out to as many people as we can and give them freedom. Because what we hear at our retreats, Monty, and you're going to hear it this weekend because, guys, we're coming out to Portland to see the Monty Man on Thursday, Alicia and I.
In a couple days.
And we're going to actually perform a shelter retreat. And you'll hear them say, why didn't anybody tell us this? And that's what keeps us going, guys, is that we know that people are not hearing about this. And when they hear about it, we see such freedom and such hope rise within the hopeless. Think about someone who goes into a shelter and they're told, it's a pause in life, really, right?
Yeah.
They're hitting the pause button and somebody says it's a long road. What does do you think an addict, how does that help an addict's, you know, psyche? It's the last thing they want to hear, even if it is a long road. The last thing they want to hear is it's a long road, because that's what they felt their whole life.
Yeah.
They can't do it. It's going to be too much. It's a lot of hard work, right?
Yeah.
So they go into this thing and they get 2 weeks into it. They get nothing except they've gotten some meals and they've gotten some things. Now, maybe if they're a little sober, all of their problems in life have come to the surface and they say, well, but what are we doing about this anyway?
Yeah. Yeah.
When we come in, and this is what makes us different, is that we bring this release, this life-saving process that we can show you in a weekend and give you practical and spiritual guidance and practical spiritual things and practical things, life things, to begin walking this process out in our life while we clean up the past. And Monty and Alicia has seen this. It brings us a level of hope to somebody. Oh, you mean I can see something move, the needle move Monday morning and really start moving? Yes, you can. So instead of saying in a year you're going to start climbing Mount Everest, well, start climbing. It's going to take a while, but at least you're not in base camp anymore.
Mm. Exactly. And you said the best word ever in there is to begin. We're just beginning. And we want them to leave knowing that you're not done. And I say that over and over and over when I'm retreats, is the information is not transformation, right? We need implementation. We need to keep going, keep growing. Even us that are recovered, we're still growing. Look at me, I'm working on this sugar thing. And there's always something to keep going and keep going. But we can get them through that first part and then like launch them off. And quickly, you know, and I think many think it's too fast. It's too fast. It won't work, maybe, or I don't even know what people are thinking.
Well, so I kind of like Dick B used to say this all the time. He used to say, and for the listeners' sake that don't know, probably the number one historian on the history of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've ever met, Mr. Dick B. But he would say, when did we go from keep it simple to keep them sick?
Whoa, that's awesome.
And it's almost like it's almost like in our issues of control, we want our sponsees or the attendees at the meetings, we want to keep them sick, right? For what purpose?
But I don't think that's intentional.
No, I don't think so. I think they've been taught wrong. And so we end up keeping them sick.
They've been taught wrong.
Yeah.
They've been taught wrong. I think people don't want to be held accountable. Sponsors don't have sponsors.
Right.
Maybe. And so it's what trickles down is nothing. And then what's coming in is a mess, and it's a mess, I think.
People say to us, so when people say to us, why has never anyone ever told us this? This is exactly why.
Yep.
I think part of it is you go into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous today, and the fellowship, the meetings have become the program. We're fighting an uphill battle, guys, because the preeminent precedent, if that's the right phrase, in Alcoholics Anonymous today is the thing they tell you is what, Monty? Get to a meeting.
Yeah.
You got to get to a meeting. Yeah.
90 meetings in 90 days.
Which is important, but that's not it.
It should be get to the steps. So we wanted to do a sweatshirt. We might do it one of these days, Monty. That's, you know, that you ever hear meeting makers make it?
Don't even get me started on that one.
Get them started.
We want to say step. All right. We want to say step takers make it.
Yes.
Right?
And that's the thing.
I heard it said one time, it's not the meetings you make, it's the steps you take.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Very good. So when you go into these places and it's been embedded in the culture of this recovery group. I mean, embedded right up to the highest levels, that the meetings and this fellowship and this blah, 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 and the stuff that goes on is what the program is, recovery is, and then it's spewed to everyone. And this is what you face when you go in, is you're told, this is your life now. Meetings every day. When you feel a little stressed, go to a meeting. But the book doesn't say to go to a meeting when you feel a little stressed. The book says do a step 10. And so I get so frustrated about the fact that the false information, it's exactly what you said, Monty. And that's our purpose, guys. What makes us different is we're going to tell the truth. We're going to tell it to you. And we're going to give you a path to the same freedom that they had back when this whole thing started.
Well, then that's a great segue for like a little bit of history, Tom, if you can give it, of like, why do we think ours is better? Or why, what are they hearing that, why didn't you tell me this? What are those things? Like, where did this begin?
Right, and some of our listeners certainly are right now going like, what are they talking about? Exactly what are they talking about? So, and we think that's the case in a lot of times when I speak, I'll get somebody to come up later and go, what's a big book? Right? Sometimes you don't realize that. People don't know what that is.
Right.
What we do at Came to Believe Recovery is we put on weekend retreats, guys. We put on a 3-day weekend retreat where we take you through all 12 steps of the program, which is to say we're going to take you through 1 through 9 once, and we're going to send you off with homework. So you're going to do your 8 and 9, maybe 9, for the rest of your life, or as long as it takes to keep to get that all cleaned up. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to teach you how to live on 10, 11, and 12 the rest of your life. 10, 11, and 12 were never meant to be done and over. And I think that's to be talked about later, that some of the programs take you a year and you do 10 for a month, 11, and then 12, and there's some graduation. It was never meant to be that. Hmm. We teach them how to work 10, 11, and 12 and then send them off with the freedom. Now, why do we do it that way? What makes us think, you know, I've had people say, why do you guys only do it in a weekend? We take a year. And I say, why do you do it in a year?
Right.
Yeah,
there's no indications in the book to do it over length. And there's many indications in the book that they did not do it in a length. If you read the book, Monty and Alicia, and knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous, nothing at all, you would do the steps right away. You just follow the program and you'd never go to a meeting.
That's right. That's right.
So this is this truth that's so hard to infuse now into the meeting culture. But we're going to do it, guys. We're going to work on it. We're going to do it at one meeting at a time, one person at a time. Do it softly and easily. We're going to go in and, you know, as soon as alcoholics, you're telling them they're wrong. They've just stopped listening to you.
We don't want to bash meetings, though, because, I mean, where are they going to find us? They're going to find us in the meetings. We can get service in the meetings. I love meetings. That's where I share more of what I started this podcast with. But that's not the end all be all. Meetings. It's getting a sponsor you find in the meetings and get through the steps. And then get sponsees and continue.
Yeah. The sole purpose, and I get in trouble every time I say this, but that's fine. The sole purpose of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is to introduce people to a power greater than themselves to help them solve their problem. And if that meeting isn't doing that, I am sorry, you are in a bad group. Mm-hmm. Now, that's my opinion, but...
No, you know, Monty, I'm gonna double down with you. The book backs you up and says the main purpose of the book is to show precisely how we recover.
Yes.
So I say then that's the purpose of the retreat, and it's the purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous and the meeting. And the main objective is to help you find a power greater than yourself that will solve your problem.
Amen.
It's just what you said.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're going to show you how we recovered, and we're going to introduce you to the power that helped us recover, that got us recovered.
Yeah.
I'm 100%. You can be doing something, guys, that has some sort of benefit, but if you're calling yourself AA, if you're not doing those two things, you're right in a bad meeting, or it's not an AA meeting.
Yeah.
Right.
Please call something. Please call it something else.
Right. Please call it something else.
The 12 noon loony noony complain about your day meeting. Right.
So let's go back for a second. Let's give a little more context to why we do and why we speak with such confidence about this, because we do. We're confident about what we do. We don't know that it's the only way, right? We want to say that.
Right.
At all. We would be foolish to say that we're the only path. But what we do say is, if you want to know how they did it and want to try it, we do know how that was. And we're confident that we teach it exactly the way they did it. And your choice, anyone, try it. If it works for you, great. If it doesn't work for you, we wish you luck. But we would never say that we're the only way. And the book says that too. If what does it say? If we can... Well, our hat is off to the man who can find another way out of this. And we are all aware of people that have become recovered and come connected to a power that has saved them, and they haven't done the steps. So they've done something. I could, you know, make a case behind the scenes that they did the steps. They just didn't name them that.
They didn't realize
it. Exactly, right? They just didn't know that they were doing them.
So back in the 1930s, before the book was written, and if you guys are history buffs, I'm just going to big picture this. The guys, Clarence, or Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, and amongst a few others, were trying to get sober, and they had stumbled on a way of doing it between them. And part of how they figured this out was attending an Oxford group. I'm going very big picture on this, guys, but sure. I just want to get to the point where what they were doing was they pulled a process that freed them from their addiction by reading the Bible. They were reading Bibles. Sorry, guys, if you don't like it, but that's what they were doing.
That's what they did.
All right, they were reading the Bible. And they were attending these first century Christian Bible studies. And they were taking principles that they were learning out of that and applying to their lives. And they found that they were getting freed from their addictions. Freed. And more than just freed from their addiction, they were getting their lives back. And this fourth dimension of existence, this thing that was... something they couldn't even have contemplated. One of the guys that was in these meetings with Bill and Dr. Bob was Clarence Snyder. And he was a guy that was from Akron, Cleveland. Somebody's going to correct me. He's one of the other. And Clarence was taken through his steps by Dr. Bob, and Dr. Bob did it with him very quickly, a day or two. It was a short period of time. We do it in 3 days. Sometimes Dr. Bob did it in an afternoon. There's evidence in history of it. And sometimes it takes a half a day, 2 days. There's a little bit of variation, and we are okay with all that. But they took him through it very quickly. And Clarence got freed. In 1984, Clarence took Steve Foreman, who is still alive today, through the steps just the way Dr. Bob did it. And he took Jack Rapp through it, and he took Dale Morfitt through it. And actually, Clarence took quite a few people through the country through it. But these are four that we know of.
Mm-hmm.
And these four are really the foundation of what we do. So what it says is, Monty and Alicia, is we're like two steps from the founders. Mm-hmm. So it was Dr. Bob and Bill who were found this solution and put this process in place and translated it to Clarence, who translated it to Steve, who translated it to me. I'm like third generation.
Gotcha.
So we do speak with a level of confidence about this. I knew Grace Snyder, Clarence's wife, and traveled with her for 2 years. Hmm. So I heard from the horse's mouth's wife, if that's her,
yeah.
about what he did and what he said about this stuff. So we do speak with some confidence. And what we're doing is exactly what Clarence said Dr. Bob did with him and what they were doing back then that had them in freedom. And it was about God, guys. It was about a relationship with God. It was never about a higher power. And if it was higher power was mentioned, it was always in the context of a God, a supernatural creative intelligence of the universe. And very quickly, it was the God of the Bible. That's just the way it was. And that's really the way it is today.
If and that's when it was the most effective.
With that power,
and that's right. The way we teach it now, because we want it to work. We want it to be effective for people.
You guys, this is a good place to. We got to pause and take a really quick break, folks. You don't want to go away. We're going to pick this back up right after this.
Accessing this in all of our shows has never been easier. Simply visit our website at take12radio.com and subscribe to any of the podcasting platforms listed there. Take 12 Recovery Radio, the original recovery talk and positive music radio station and podcast.
Hey, this is the Monty Man. Now I know you're already listening to our brand new Came to Believe Recovery podcast. But did you know there is so much more to Came to Believe Recovery? Now, I'd like to invite you to experience their website right after this show and get to know the incredible work that you can be a part of as well as we work together to break through to the hope that comes through what the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous refer to as the spirit of the universe. So, write this down. CameToBelieveRecovery.org. You got it? That's CameToBelieveRecovery.org. Now, back to our show. All right, welcome back. You've tuned into the brand new Came to Believe Recovery podcast. And we're talking with Tom Williams and Felicia Martinez. And we've been talking about what makes Came to Believe different. And we left off with some history about Clarence Snyder from Cleveland, actually. And bring us back to where you left off right before the break there, Tom.
So I was concluding that Clarence had taken four of our founders of Came to Believe through the steps, and they are the ones who have spearheaded this movement that has started really in 1984 with Steve Foreman. Clarence started the first retreat in 1966 that he ran himself, but the movement really took steam when Steve and Jack and Dale Morfitt got a hold of this, and their wives. Sue and Carol and BJ also went through the steps as Al-Anons, which is a great point to make right now, that the program was meant for everybody, guys.
Everybody.
Back in those early days, everybody came. The families came, the wives came, everybody came. The family got sick together, the family gets well together. And so their wives were part of this too. And they began to spread the word, and that's when they began to spread the retreats all around the country, and they spread over to England. There's 15 retreats a year in the UK right now.
Wow.
That
are Came to Believe and, retreats.
Right, Came to Believe. And we've expanded them here in the United States. We've taken on things like shelters and missions, which is a place we had never been before. And what we're wanting to do is just spread this legacy. What we want, Monty, and all of you listeners, is at least when someone looks to address their addiction, we at least are an option.
Yeah.
Of all the things they could do, at least we want them to know this is one of the options they could do. And if it worked for them, they too might get freedom. So that's what we do. And that's our history. Our history goes right back to the founders. We're holding true to what they were doing back then. And we're spreading that message to anyone that we can and as often as we can, Monty.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Who knew? One of the best kept secrets out there is what you guys are doing. I mean, I didn't know it until my co-host Roger McDermott pointed it out to me. But people are going to know it now, that's for sure. And I'm so blessed to be part of it, you guys.
You know, and Alicia can tell her story. I met Alicia just 2 years ago, and Alicia had long-term sobriety in years when she showed up at a Nevada City retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And she always hates when I do this, but she showed up with her.
I don't believe it.
Arms crossed in the front row with this guy, that look on her face. See that look?
Yeah. Yeah, you ain't gonna tell me nothing.
Well, I think today
think I
she'll
that.
Be on. You did do it. This today that. I think when you have long-term sobriety and you've been through a lot of things, you're all of a sudden you're being told what you were doing wasn't right, or I missed something all this time. It could arise a little bit of, you know, defensiveness in you maybe. And I think she thought it was too good to be true and was very skeptical initially. And we had 20 million phone calls with 140 million questions that followed.
I am the question giver. Oh, yeah. Watch out if you get around me. I'm going to have 50 questions about anything you tell me, and I'm going to analyze it and then make a sheet on it and then have more questions about it.
But Alicia got a freedom. Alicia got an awakening at that retreat that weekend that was something different than she had received in anything else she'd been doing, Monty. And this is so many of the stories we hear, not just people that walk in drunk, and we get those that walk in drunk to our retreats or with just a couple of days.
And you're welcome.
All the way in it.
That's okay.
And you're welcome. All the way to an Alicia who's been 25 years sober, but she left with a profound change. And she's taken this on hook, line, and sinker, and now is one of our senior volunteers, travels all over the country with me. She won't leave the country.
Right, I don't want to go to the UK.
She won't leave the country.
No desire.
And teaches. And no. Roger McDermott is another example, who's your co-host on your show, Monty, who had been sober for a long time and actually knew of our way, but had never been to a retreat. And boy, is he on board now coming to the retreat in Malibu.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I just met him when we were there in Malibu in December.
We were there.
And what's such a trip is I met Roger at a Dick B conference in Southern California years ago and met Dale Marsh at that same convention. But I had no idea that I would ever see Dale again. I really didn't know if I'd ever see Roger again, you know. And then all these years later, what, like 14 years, something, whatever it is, you know, this has all come full circle. And once again, it just is more examples of how God works in multiples. I mean, he is the great multitasker, right? He's putting everything together way before we ever suspected. Mm-hmm. You know, and we get to be a part of his great plan. What an awesome, you know what? I don't understand why anybody'd want to miss that.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's the winning lottery ticket, right?
Yeah.
Who gets a winning lottery ticket and they say, these are the numbers. Or let's say this, you got a 90% chance with this ticket. You got a 10% chance with that one.
Right.
Which ticket are you taking?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
just amazing to me. And that's kind of what you're being told with our program. This thing they did was 90% effective. There's lots of history to it. If we want to be really conservative and go to 75%, it's still an astronomical number.
Yeah.
When it comes to recovery rates of today. And recovery rates today are generally based on completion of a program. Right, Monty? I see retreat rehab centers will say, we have a 90% recovery rate. No, it's a 90% completion of their program rate. They graduate them.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean anything in reality. So when we say that, we're saying long-term sustainable sobriety. We're saying people that live in the go. Yeah. They are living happy, joyous, and free, successful lives. Why wouldn't you want that? If it doesn't work, you had a nice weekend with some nice people and ate some food.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but what if it does, guys?
What if it does? What if it does? So let me ask you this question. So I know I was having a discussion with somebody that is part of a faith-based residential recovery program that does not really have any kind of aftercare. Their aftercare consists of calling the graduate up 30 days out, or having the graduate call them, rather, 30 days out, 60 days out, 90 days out. And they ask the question, have you stayed clean and sober? And they either tell the truth or they lie, but nobody knows the difference. And, oh, yeah, I'm clean and sober, yeah. Okay, success. And I was telling this person, I said, listen, I'll tell you how you measure success. It isn't by the beds you fill. It isn't by the money you raise. Where are these people out 5 years afterwards? Where are they? What are they doing? Are they giving back? Are they productive members of society? And have they – I mean, the substance part – That'll take care of itself if they're practicing these other things. Where are they 5 years from now? So my question to you guys is, do you have any kind of follow-up that people can like keep in contact with you? How do you kind of, you know, regulate that?
That would be a tricky one. Let me take a stab at it, Tom, okay. And then you can put a cherry on top. I would think that is something that we really would need to organize and put into place. We do give them tools to start a meeting if they want to. And we have meetings online they can plug into. Many of them, we say, come back and we're going to do retreats again. You can help us. We have a lot of volunteers in New York and California. We have a lot. And we're starting Southern California now. But it takes a lot of work and a lot of time. So to be honest, I mean, Tom, what do you see in the future for us to kind of do that? Though it's kind of too like, well, I mean, their job.
Yes. Because
I think we might need to do something.
Tom?
Well, the process that we call it, here's what the program says, okay? The program says we're going to commence this way of living as we cleaned up our path. And we're going to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And it's not an overnight matter. Okay. So how do we do that? Commencing this way of living is a way of living living the principles that were expressed: honesty, unselfishness, purity, and love in the four absolutes that could be an overriding philosophy of life, I guess. And you're going to do it by staying in fellowship with others that are on the same path. So our mission, Monty, is to integrate ourselves into the meeting system and have the meetings transformed to what they were supposed to be, which are the fellowship of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope, and waiting for the newcomer to come in to tell them to take the steps to get their freedom. So our follow-up would be to encourage people to align immediately with someone else who has had a spiritual awakening, who can help guide them in their steps 10, 11, and 12, and help them to create good habits in their life, and help them on a path to a consciousness with their new God, their new creator, their new manager, as Clarence would say.
Yeah.
And then get them helping others. And it's going to happen in a meeting system. So it's one of our missions is that we're going to have retreats, and the follow-ups are 10, 11, and 12 meetings that are going to go on, that we keep track of you and we actually feed into you.
Yeah. Yeah. You are breaking up a bit. I'm not sure why. Is he breaking up to you, Alicia?
Yeah. I heard him, but it was breaking up.
Yeah. So listeners, if you are ones that like to pray and believe in prayer, pray for our new podcast, because we've been having some technical difficulties a little bit here and there. And I am faithful that it'll work itself out. But just hang in there with us. Go ahead, Tom.
So that's our thing. We're having the follow up. We're promoting a meeting and a follow up process exactly like the founders would have, which is attend, connect with your fellow recoveries, and uplift each other and share experience, strength, and hope, and help each other through the growing process of learning how to grow and understanding and effectiveness. Yeah. And we're going to facilitate that every way we can.
Alicia, can you expound a little bit on what living in the go is?
Living in the go is 10, 11, and 12. And so that is, like we were talking about before, of giving them once they do 1 through 9, they don't have to do it ever again. Obviously, they have homework to get their amends done and continue in that process, but which is 10. So they don't have to go back and do 4 again and go back and do all those again. They stay in 10, 11, and 12, which we teach on the last day of the retreat on a Sunday. And we just teach them to continue, right, to take personal inventory when you were wrong, promptly admitted it, and then grow in your relationship with God from wherever you are. So improve your conscious contact. Your conscious contact improvement is going to be different than mine. And that's okay. Just continue to grow in that and get into service. And that's when we stress and try to see, have them come volunteer with us, because we need people to hear fifth steps, and we need people to, you know, on the ground giving flyers and starting new meetings, Came to Believe meetings, and going to regular AA meetings, NA meetings, OA meetings, and telling them about this, which sometimes is scary because they don't want to hear. A lot of people don't want to hear about this stuff because it's not their meeting, or which I get for where I live. It's a scary space. It's a very scary space. But that's so 10, 11, and 12. Continue. We're never done. Keep going. Get a sponsor. get sponsees when you're ready and just keep going, keep going, keep going forever.
Yeah.
Like you're never done. Never done, never done, never done. And it's going to look different for everybody.
Sure.
Which is
sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Amen. We are just about out of time. I'm going to see if I can get Tom back in here. Tom, what can people kind of look forward to in the future when it comes to this podcast?
We're going to tackle all sorts of subjects. Monty, we want to bring the truth out in this podcast. We want to dispel myths. We want to talk about what the big book does say and what it doesn't say, mm-hmm. and more importantly, what it doesn't say. We want to talk about the steps and the promises and what should be happening. We're going to have shows about the promises. We're going to have shows about God. We're going to talk about God as we understood him, which is what it says in the book. And what is this God concept or conception and all of these things in the big book? We're going to talk about all these subjects. Guys, you can look forward to learning about the freedom, learning about the program the way it was, learning about how to take the steps and live the freedom that they lived.
Yes.
I am really looking forward to this. Listeners, I think what you're going to find in this podcast, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of podcasts out there, recovery podcasts out there now, but I think you are going to find something different. And the big thing that's going to be different is we're not going to candy coat anything. Came to Believe is not going to candy coat anything. They're going to say it like it is, and they're going to present it to you, and then it's up to you, you know, if you want to digest that, chew on that, what you want to do with it. But they're going to tell you the truth, because doing anything other than that
absolutely
would just be unfair. You guys, we are out of time. We have a closing song. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Alicia, so much for our first debut show of the Came to Believe Recovery
we
podcast.
Did it.
Yeah, you did. You did.
Our first podcast.
All right. So we're excited. So our closing song is by a group called After the Chase, and it's entitled Second Chance.
Second chance again. a message worth depth and weight. And it was the battle cry of the founders of the 12-step movement and does reflect the marching orders of Came to Believe Recovery. The retreats, the founders, the steps, the living in the go, and now this brand new podcast, all part of the dynamic work that makes the partnership of Take 12 Recovery Radio and Came to Believe Recovery part of God's handiwork as we work together hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Now, Came to Believe Recovery strives to create and promote opportunities for life-changing spiritual experiences for individuals and families suffering from all forms of addiction. For more information, help, and support, visit CameToBelieveRecovery.org. I am your host, The Monty Man, inviting you to like, bookmark, and subscribe to the Came to Believe Recovery podcast. When you do, you will join the Take 12 Recovery Radio family and will be notified of all of our recovery-focused shows throughout the week. So until our next broadcast, when we provide the essential spiritual tools needed to thrive by sharing our experience, our strength, and our hope through our stories of how we came to believe.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof, woof.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.